Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
That is, of course, Pink Floyd, The Wall. We don't need no education. And the reason we're playing it is unbelievable numbers of people contacting the show and the station this morning wanting to talk about the schools returning. I think that's possibly on the foot of me being on The Tonight Show last night in part. But also, of course, it is an enormous issue for families around the country. What's going to happen to their kids in September? Yesterday on the show, we did talk about the new guidelines published by the Department of Education. No social distancing under the age of third class. A minimum of 1 metre social distancing above that, all the way up to sixth year. And National Parents Primary School Council CEO Áine Lynch has told the Oireachtas Special Committee that the majority of parents want their children to return to school fully at the beginning of the school year. The Association of Secondary Teachers of Ireland, the ASTI, warned that students would not be able to return to school if current health guidelines remain in place. What do you think? 53106. Our text line has been hopping literally since morning on this one. And so far, the majority of people getting in touch with us want their kids to go back to school. We might put up a poll, lads. We might put up a Twitter poll and see what you think. Do you want your kids back fully in school in September or not? It'll be a black and white question. Did you want, as in not that you don't want them to have an education, we'll take that as a given. Do you want a blended learning remote sort of scenario? 53106, let us know what you think about all of this. And Stephen is on the line in Cavan. Stephen, I believe you got in touch because you wanted to have a little debate with me about what I said last night on the telly.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
I'm delighted.
I listened to you yesterday and you made a statement that you had a plan for each classroom that everybody could go back to school.
That's not quite what I said. What I said was I did a back of an envelope. I'll tell you what I said. I said I did a back of an envelope plan, and I said I took a classroom that was 20 feet by 15 feet, which I thought was probably or possibly an average size classroom. I was guessing that one. But I remember my own school days and I would have guessed the classrooms were about that kind of size, and I can't imagine they've gotten smaller. Obviously, there are older schools maybe that are not as well got, but certainly modern schools would be that or bigger. And when I plotted in the little bodies and kept them all a metre apart, and I used feet because it was easier with the graph paper, so, and I kept everyone just over 3 feet apart, I had 30 people and 30 students and a teacher in that classroom.
OK, well, I've done the maths myself as well. And I did this not because of last night. I'd already done it with my daughter.
Well, it's a good thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. When my daughter was told that she was coming home from her school in Kells, I did this because of the long-term effects I thought it may have.
Yeah.
And based on the latest guidelines by the education.ie technical guidance documents when they're building a school, a primary school classroom has to be 80 square metres.
Okay.
So 80 square metres would allow you to have 19 pupils and one teacher. And the reason I get that is that you have to have 1 metre front, 1 metre back, 1 metre to the right and 1 metre to the left. Therefore, each person that's in the classroom has to have 4 square metres. So 20 people at 4 square metres is your 80 square metres.
That's not true. They need 1 metre between them. They don't need 4 metres. It isn't 1 metre between
front,
me and you. And
1 metre. Hold on a minute, Kira.
Yeah.
If you're going to be 1 metre away from everybody around you,
mm-hmm.
that means 1 metre to the front of you, 1 metre to the left, 1 metre to the right, and 1 metre behind. Because you have to be 1 metre in every direction. So therefore, the calculation is 2 metres by 2 metres, which is your 1 metre to the left, 1 metre to the right, and you're 1 metre in front and 1 metre behind. So you need 4 square metres with regards to the space for each child or each adult.
Okay.
In a secondary school,
I think I might tweet out my drawing, because I did actually do it. I think I might tweet it out and ask people what they think.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I want my daughter to go back to school. But my problem is that the guidelines state that even at 1 metre apart, the number of pupils and a teacher in a primary school can be no more than 20. And the number of pupils and teachers in a secondary school, based on the guidelines, is 14.
Okay.
Now, there's no way schools can do that and keep within the guidance, shall we say.
I think where we're at is a differing on our mathematics here, Stephen. How I did it was, and I don't want to get too much, because it's a hard listen for people, but I did it on graph paper, and I literally put five students across the back of the class. They were, they had their backs to the wall. They weren't a meter from the wall. They were like about a foot from the wall, say. Do you know what I mean? And then in front of each of them, they were all sort of a meter apart sideways, and in front of them, another meter in front of them was another row, and a meter in front of them was another row. And, you know, it was very much like a normal classroom, because if you have kids on those individual desks, they are, it doesn't have to be that the tables are a metre apart, it's that the students are a metre apart, and it seemed to function fine.
Yeah, but as I've said to you, if you do the maths based on 1 metre in front and 1 metre behind, because the pupil behind you has to be a metre from you, the pupil in front of you has to be a metre from you. Mm-hmm. So therefore the distance for you is 2 metres, one in front, one in back. One left, one right. That means that your area that you've got to keep clear is 4 square metres.
Well,
if the classroom has been designed as 80.
We'll get into the big substantive issue in a second, but the last thing I'll say to you is if you take that centre person who has one in front of them, the person that's in front of them is a metre in front of them, and the person behind them is a metre behind them, and that's fine. And then you put people to the side. But then what you're actually looking at is in that set of square metres, there's 9 kids because there's one at each point. It doesn't matter. Look, it's too hard to do that bit on radio. Nonetheless, how do you feel about, you said you have a daughter. What class did you say she was in?
She's going away into junior cert in September.
All right, so she needs her school.
She's critical.
She needs her school, not just from an educational point of view, because she's coming up to state exams. She's at that age where her peers, her friends, her social interactions, all of that part of her development is critically important. We're in agreement on that.
Can
I ask you, and I mean this in no way to out your family or any such thing, because I have teenagers myself, is she mixing with her friends now?
Yes, but not every day. Meeting maybe 3 times a week, three or four of them, staying 2 metres apart, going for walks to the local lake, etc. Well, she tells me, and she's quite sensible.
And I'm not knocking her. I'm sure she's a gorgeous girl, Stephen. I suppose the point I would have liked to have made last night if I'd had a chance was this, that I think that social distancing, if my eyes are not deceiving me, is over for teenagers and children. I walk up the street, I walk through housing estates, I walk around a town, and I have kids myself, and I see kids, children and teenagers in gangs, and they're not social distancing. And I'm not trying to shame them for this. I'm saying this is already happening. This is a given. They're playing together when they're small, and the bigger ones are hanging around together, and they're doing that. So we're going to know over the course of this summer whether or not children and teenagers mixing freely is a big source of transmission, because they are already doing it. And we will know that before we go back to school. And if it is the case that we do not see a surge among that group or a surge among the contacts of that group, well, then we know that this whole conversation is a good thing, because realistically, they're not contributing overall to the transmission rates. And I think we are going to know that because it's happening already. I don't think I'm wrong when I say that. I mean, have you seen the gangs hanging around?
I know you do. You see certain people who would be in 15 and 20s. But my issue with it is, I think you're already seeing that in other parts of the world where they've let lockdown go, gangs of people are meeting, and you just have to look at the United States and places like that. It's a disaster.
Well, the United States are a law unto themselves. And
people being in groups. I mean, I know my daughter will meet her 3 or 4 friends and they'll have a good time together. And from a social point of view, I think that's very necessary. My issue is that if you're going to have social guidelines, when you're out with a gang, you might be with them for an hour or 2 hours or maybe even three. But when you're at school, you're there from 9 o'clock until four. You're in close proximity the whole time. And that's where, for me, we've got to get this 100% right, or we could have a school closure completely for the next 9 months.
Yeah, but
that's not what anybody wants.
You see, I come from this position and this position only. And I'm going to bring Michelle in on the line from Kilkenny in just a second. But I come from this position. It was a given that the hospitals could not close. It was a given that the supermarkets could not close. We had to do whatever it took to make them be open. And that's my view on schools as well, that we have to do whatever it takes to make schools be open. And if that means our students in secondary school are all wearing masks, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with whatever we have to do. I don't have a problem with a Perspex screen between the teacher's desk and the children's in the classroom's desks. I don't have a problem with whatever it is that we have to do. I don't think that is the issue. I think we do whatever it is that we need in order to get the kids back into schools. That would be my view. And it's
no, I would agree with you, Kira. I don't have a problem with that. The issue is the government is not doing it.
The government
are not putting the place. The things in place financially or whatever.
Well, I'm
to ensure
hopeful.
The schools are safe.
I want to give Norma Foley a crack of the whip because I felt that there was an absolute lack of direction from the Department of Education throughout the pandemic. And she did come out of the traps at the start of the week with a plan. I don't know any more than anyone else does if it's the right plan or the wrong plan, but she at least seemed to be taking the bull by the horns a little bit. But stay with me, Stephen, because I want to hear different views on this. Michelle's on the line in Kilkenny. Michelle, you are a parent. You're also a secondary school teacher. What do you think of this?
Hi, Kira. Yes, that's right. I have three kids in secondary school and I'm a secondary school teacher
myself.
Okay,
so you know all about it.
Yes, I've seen it from both sides, my children, and they're dealing with online learning and then obviously trying to do it myself for my students. So I agree with a lot of what you're saying there. We did feel there was a lack of direction from the department. And, you know, fundamentally, I as a teacher and my colleagues, we want to be back in school in September in whatever way the department or the government or the health guidelines will allow us to do that.
Okay.
And that's what we want to do. So teachers want to be back. And, you know, I don't think there's any argument from us that we want to be back in school. Want it safe to do that. Well, you know, obviously there'll be people with family situations who have underlying health conditions. But so many of my colleagues have young children, and if their children aren't back in school, you know, they're going to have a difficulty going back to school as well. But we want.
None of these things, and I want you to believe me, Michelle. None of these things are trick questions. Okay, I'm not trying to ambush any. I actually just want to have a conversation about where we're going with all of this. But it struck me if I look around Marconi, right where I work here, it's an open plan office, and some of them who are in the office have been here from the beginning throughout the pandemic. Some of them who are working from home. We talk to remotely and all of that, and then there's people like me who were home for a while and then ended up back in. So there's a kind of a mixture of people. The people who've been at home on a kind of a permanent basis appear, you know, outside the work, but they're working. They're working from home like teachers were doing remote learning as well, but they were at home. When we talk to them here and we talk about coming in, there's a nervousness among that cohort of workers because they've been out of the loop and it seems daunting. Is that an issue for teachers? You've been out of the classroom setting for... By the time you get back in, it'll be 6 months. Is that contributing to it, that there's an anxiousness? And I don't underestimate the impact of that. And I don't underestimate the need that you guys have for clarity from the department and all of that stuff. But is that part of this, that teachers are going, whoa, we're nervous. We've heard all this bad stuff. We've been out of the workplace, the physical workplace for a long time. And it's making us angsty.
Well, I can only speak for my own behalf, obviously. And I'm not nervous about going back.
Okay.
I want to be back in the classroom. That's where the best teaching and learning happens. And so that's all I can say is that that's what I want to do.
Okay, yeah.
And once that I'm not going to, you know, bring any health problems home to my family, or once if there, you know, if there are underlying health problems in families where teachers are coming from, that they're
I think teachers with underlying problems have to be protected. But I think that for every job, if you're a bus driver and you have an under, you know what I mean, everybody is in that same boat. Can I ask you to put your parent hat on for a moment, Michelle? I know you're a teacher as well, but the parent hat. Do you think that remote learning and blended learning and all was good enough for kids? Because I had three kids in three different schools going through it, and I did not find it nearly on any level as good as them actually being in the school place.
Well, it was very mixed. I had broadband and Wi-Fi issues myself.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, doing live classes and having to pre-share the information with students so one of them could share it on screen because my broadband wasn't good enough. And then there were plenty of students who couldn't access it during the day because maybe they had other demands in their house with parents working, and they would access the recorded class at night and do the work. So it certainly was not ideal, but in my school, I feel we made the best of but the it's, situation.
Would you agree it's still not the same standard as if you had the kids in the classroom in front of you, or if your kid was going into school and actually getting taught by a teacher?
Of
who,
course.
Yeah. Okay. So we're all in agreement. It's kind of second rate. And I'm not knocking the teacher. I'm actually trying at all not to knock the teachers. My sister's a teacher. She told me she worked twice as hard during this as normal, trying to organise.
Yeah.
Trying to organise the Zooms
hard.
And everything. And I believe her.
Yep.
But the point is, it still delivered a poorer service to the kids.
It did, but it came about with no warning. And
yeah.
I'm looking at new school
completely.
That's transitioning to a lot more online platforms. And so we had things set up, but still for us it was difficult. And then you have schools who had nothing set up and had to go and start from scratch. So, you know, it was not an ideal situation.
Listen, you were given no warning any more than anyone else, and I completely understand that as well, completely. Sharon's also on the line. Sharon, why did you want to get in touch on this subject?
I just felt, Ciara, thanks very much for
You're
having
delighted.
Me on. I just felt that I have two daughters in secondary school, in two different schools. And one is going into fifth year, one is going into third year. And, you know, when it kind of came out in the news that it may be blended learning, something, my daughter going into fifth year, like, had a fit, kind of like, what? It's not going to work. It's whatever.
Yeah.
And my daughter going into third year, she has a shunt. So why I texted in and saying I was conflicted, I mean, they definitely need to get back to school. Definitely blended learning is very difficult. But I've had battles, you know, with the Department of Education over the years, like trying to get exemptions, different things for my third year. And they're not an easy crowd to deal with. So my sympathy would be with the schools, because the department will come out and they'll say this, that and the other, and we're going to do this, whatever. But they never, you know, trickle the resources down to the individual schools then. It's a battle for the schools to get everything from the Department of Education and Skills. And that's where my concern is, because I think it's all right to say, you know, there's a clamour now, get them back and, you know, whatever. But, you know, when wintertime comes and there's steaming up the windows and, you know, there's all these kids blended in, there's teenagers and they're not, you know, observing cough etiquette or anything like that, I think then we're going to be in trouble. And obviously I have a bias then, because my daughter, maybe, I don't know. I mean, I certainly will be in contact with Temple Street before she goes back, but I don't know if she had extra risk. I don't know anything about that. And I think there's, I suppose, an attitude, and I kind of feel it as well, that there's a little lack of empathy about people who are vulnerable. Like they say, vulnerable teachers, vulnerable, whatever. But it's what's going to be made for them? What resources are going to be provided to them if they're not able to go back into the general population?
I totally empathise with that fear. And I think you're right. I also think there may be children and teachers, but not just children and teachers. There may be office workers and bus drivers and postmen. And there may be people in all different aspects of society who have to cocoon for a bit longer because of their own personal things. And I get that. And I agree with you. Something needs to be put in place, particularly for the education of those kids. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that's not a reason to keep schools closed. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, no, no. And absolutely. I totally agree. And I totally agree with you saying that, you know, because I used to be working in the medical sector. So I have seen friends of mine, like, literally on their knees after working through this pandemic. And obviously I watched the St. James's documentary, you know. So absolutely essential workers. But my fear is, after having many years of battles with them, is that it doesn't translate into resources on the ground. Like they're saying about, I mean, my kids, you know, local national school, I was on the Parents Association. I mean, minor things like cleaning, like getting, windows fixed up. It doesn't happen.
And that's my fear. And you're exactly right.
Exactly.
And in the same way, a billion was spent on PPE that doesn't normally get spent on PPE in the health service. I don't know what the fee will have to be, but there'll have to be money for hand sanitizers. There'll have to be money for... I've no issue. I have kids in secondary school and I'd have no issue with them wearing masks. I like, they're not...
No, same
they're,
here.
They're
Absolutely.
Not... Wallflowers. My I have sturdy children who could pop a mask on, and my youngest child, who is 11, goes to the supermarket and all in a mask, and I see no reason.
Same here.
You know, so I don't even think that 13 should be the cutoff age. I think it should be younger. I want to bring Stephen back in, who I still have. Stephen, Your calculations are wrong, according to my text line, and I think they are too. Stephen is wrong here. Each student needs a clear half metre around them and then another half metre clear on the other side to the next one. That creates a 1 metre barrier. Your contributor is wrong. He's not allowing for two people having 1 metre between them. Their exclusion zones overlap. It proves people need to go to school to learn maths. One has to allow for the desk width, but he is undercalculating the numbers, and that's from Brian. And Dave says, Kira, his calculation incorrect. He's counting areas twice. If you're counting 1 metre behind a student, that looks after the 1 metre in front of the student. If you count 4 square metres, then there's 2 metres between each student. Stephen, respond.
No. Obviously, some people do have to go back and do maths. If you do it properly.
I think you're right
if you want. The basis of mathematics is if you need to be in front by 1 metre and back by 1 metre, which is what the spatial distancing is. If you're in a supermarket or you're in any other retail, you're told to stay 2 metres apart.
Yeah.
That's 2 metres at the front and 2 metres behind you.
Yeah.
So you can't have somebody within 2 metres of you behind, and you can't have somebody within front of you within 2 metres. Allegedly.
Can I just say, if you take a 1 metre square, like this, I know this is very complex for people listening, but if you take a 1 metre square, right, put a 1 metre square on the ground, and if 4 people stand at each corner, they're all 1 metre apart. And that's a 1 metre square with them standing on the 4 corners.
What you're doing, though, is you then have to reorganise the classroom, because the desks that they have in classrooms, which are prefixed, are all circular for people to sit at corners of each of the desks. It's impossible to do it.
No, you don't have to sit at the corner of the desk. The point I'm making is if you have 1 square metre in the middle of 4 people, they're all 1 metre apart. And yeah, you're totally right. We are going to have to reorganise classrooms. Yeah, we are going to have to get single desks.
The problem you've got there, though, Kira, is that you're only taking 1 square metre. When you go to the next square metre, then you have a problem, because at the end of each point, you've then got one person again.
If we add on a metre to the side, we can add on an extra 2 people. So now we have 2 square metres, and on each, in the middle bits and on the 4 corners, we now have 6 students, and they are all 1 metre apart.
Do it on graph paper. It doesn't work. I did it last night.
I did it on graph paper. Look,
I've done it on graph paper last night.
I think I'm going to have to post my picture. I think I will have to post my picture. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm not an architect, but it seems to me, when I hear the numbers being put out about how few people can be in a room with 1 metre between them, it doesn't make sense to me mathematically. Stay with me though, Stephen, and stay with me indeed, Sharon. Geraldine is on the line in Dublin. Geraldine, you think we should be looking at how other countries address the issue. That's a very good idea.
Well, Kira, I've been looking at this now for quite a while because of the difficulty, particularly of the children with special educational needs. And one of the places in particular I was looking at was Canada, because my daughter's a teacher in Canada. So I was actually over with her last February when this all kicked off. And I was very impressed with how the Canadians were actually very proactive and very, well, they're like that anyway, like they're very proactive and they're very much into problem solving. So they were looking at, this is the problem we have now, how do we address it? And they issued very, very clear guidelines on how schools would get back. And they made a very big decision in the very early stages, was they put a deadline that the schools were not going to open at the end of April. And then right at the beginning, the middle of March, they decided this thing is going to go on longer. We're now not going to open until September. And they started then looking at how they would open in September. And they issued very, very good guidelines, and I sent you an email with the outline that they had given, very, very comprehensive. And it literally then was up to each school to adopt, each board of management to adapt it to their needs. But what I was impressed by it was the language that they used in it. It was very, very, very good language that they were using. But the top first line of it says, the parent will make the choice. And that, until this health thing is over. And from the very beginning, they had parents up at the front of this.
Yeah.
Because we are the prime educators of our children. We know our children. We know what our children need and what our children don't need. But in all the stuff that's gone on here, and I've watched the Oireachtas report, what's been going on in the COVID committee, I've watched it on the videos, And we're all talking about what the system was like, what it's like today. Nobody's actually problem solving to an extent that we're saying, you know, these are the guidelines. These are the things that we know that needs to happen. Now go and adapt them.
I agree with you. I don't think it should be what we can't do. I think we should be looking at what we can
do. And I think we need to move away from this whole scenario, because each county is different, each town is different, each situation is different.
You'll have to forgive me, Darlene. I'm up against it for an ad break, and I want to give a last word to Michelle in Kilkenny. Michelle. Oh, I've lost Michelle, have I? It doesn't matter. What I wanted to know for teachers, if there are teachers out there listening, 53106 is the text line. Would you like to be involved as in a consultation process whereby you were asked, what do you think we could do to make this work? Would that be a helpful thing? Not what are you worried about? Not all the things that you are concerned won't work. What would make this work? Should we be asking teachers that question? 53106. I'd love to know from teachers what they think might help this situation. We do have a Twitter poll up, lads. It basically just asks, would you be happy to return for the children to return fully to school in September? It's a yes or no. We'd like to get some kind of a shtick on that by the end of the show, so go on to Twitter and have a look at that. Loads and loads and loads of texts. Kira, the later our children of the nation, where we were all supposed to be cherished equally, the greater the psychological and social damage there will be. A damaged childhood lasts a lifetime. Text, yes, of course the kids should go back. Kira, the kids have to go back to school fully. They need it for their mental health. The kids are mixing already and they aren't social distancing, but they're not stupid. Don't underestimate our teenagers. I don't think they would have any problem staying 2 metres or more from teachers. Teachers, stop looking for more excuses to have a longer holiday. I don't think that's necessarily fair on teachers. I'm not here about teacher bashing, but I am here about finding a way of getting kids back into schools. Let's take a break. Thank you to all those who took part there. Sharon, Geraldine, Stephen and me with our mathematics, and indeed Michelle.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
And we did talk as well about schools reopening, which is such a hot issue, I suppose, all around the country at the moment. Parents worrying, teachers worrying. We need guidelines and clarity on the guidelines, I suspect. Hi, Kira. I think schools should open as normal with no social distancing. Look anywhere and you see groups of teenagers and children gathering with no social distance. I think we read this earlier, actually. Maybe we didn't. Let the teacher have a Perspex screen if they're vulnerable. The pubs can open in any format. Then schools should be able to open fully. Contact sports, limit the numbers in the college and in the canteen. I think I did read this earlier, so I'm just going to stop. Kira, all this talk of going back to school is pointless if the foreign holidays continues. The chance of children being able to return to school in September is unlikely. I wonder how the families who do take a holiday abroad will feel when they are back home schooling in the dark wet months of October, November and December and January, all while we're potentially locked up again. Now when we are aware of the sacrifice that Tony Holohan and his family and any other frontline workers in a similar position have made, forgoing a foreign holiday isn't a lot to ask if it gets the children back to school. I'm not sure those two things are mutually exclusive, and I'm not trying to get into the travel issue, but you hear what I'm saying. Thank you for that indeed. 53106 is the text line. Do get in touch with us. Let's take a break.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
One of the other things that you have asked us to talk about today is schools and schools reopening. And we did talk about it earlier, but so many people are still getting in touch with it. Kira, I think the biggest issue with some of your comments last night is that they were perpetuating the myth that teachers are reluctant to work. The biggest challenge will not be the teachers or schools. It will be how quickly the Department of Education respond and invest in what's needed to return. Their form of this is not so good, so the unions are right to be concerned. I do think that the Department of Education has a massive role to play here. You're quite right. And it was not my intention to perpetuate that myth that teachers are reluctant to work. And in fact, I've been very clear about that today on air. Sometimes teachers are a little sensitive to any form of discussion, never mind criticism. And I can see 53106 what that's going to do from saying that. All I'm saying is I don't think it is the case. All the teachers I've spoken to on air tell me they want to go back to work. All the teachers. The ASTI are saying something a little bit different, but all the teachers I speak to want to go back to work. So this is not about teachers. I believe they would like to be in the classrooms. Hi, Kira. I'm a working parent of 2 children. Both have been in a full-time creche service since they were babies. My youngest child is due to start his second Ecce year in September. The creches who are open with diminished capacity are prioritising children who require full-time care, i.e. paid. While I'm working remotely, this is no longer our requirement. I'm not entirely certain what that's pertaining to, but presumably something to do with schools. Margaret is on the line. Margaret, what do you think about the schools issue?
Hi, Ciara. How are you doing? Well, I suppose my viewpoint was that I felt that teachers should really be classified as essential workers. And that, you know, as you were making the point earlier on, there wasn't a question whether hospitals would open. There wasn't a question whether supermarkets would open. Whether we get our deliveries to the door. So I really feel that, you know, the schools have to open. Yeah. And I suppose my experience of the blended model over COVID hasn't been a good one. So I wouldn't have any confidence that the blended yeah. model is going to work.
Preach is all I can. Margaret, I could have said those exact lines. I do believe that schools, like supermarkets, like hospitals, like certain services have to be open, because I think education is vital, not just to deliver the education to our children, which is also vital, but to create a normality for our children in terms of their social development and all of those things. I think they are vital and I think they are essential. And I think it is not will they open, but how will we make them open has to be the question.
Exactly.
You mentioned your experience of remote learning, which of course this blended learning model is still being trooped out a little bit for September. My experience sounds like it's a bit similar to yours. I had three kids in three different schools and they were all different, and there was you know, good, less good and not that great. And I'm not going to say which school was which, but like it's a challenge for the kids. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah. Well, in my experience, I have a girl that is in first class, and then I have a girl that's in play school, and she's due to start in September. And what I found was my girl that's in first class, the support was quite bad, and that there was no interaction with the teacher. It was basically we got sent page numbers to complete in the workbook, which was, you know, not ideal. But when I spoke with other parents that maybe had two or three kids in the school, again, there was inconsistencies across the school. So it really depended on the teacher rather than there was no.
So the teachers obviously weren't instructed,
approach.
This is what you're doing.
No,
so even in the same school, there was
exactly
no
yeah.
uniformity. So, interesting.
You know, I can't see how across the country they're going to roll out a model that will, you know, work consistently in terms of blended learning. And, you know, younger kids don't respond well over Zoom or over technology.
Yep.
Their attention spans are just too short for that. So
I
think we need to be looking at the how do we get them back rather than the we're not going to go back under the current guidelines.
Yeah, how can we make this happen? I think you're absolutely right. Sam, stay there, Margaret. Sam's on the line too. Sam, you think this is the perfect opportunity to upgrade education in Ireland. Well, I don't think anyone would argue. Tell me what you'd like to see happen.
Hi, Ciara. Delighted to hear that comment you've just made there about the how. And I think that is just so, so, so important. I think we've lost line of who is the most important stakeholders in all of this conversation, and it's our learners.
Yeah.
And it's the quality of learning, and it's the experience of learning, and it's the journey of learning. Okay, and there's something I want to pick up on just with language that we've had in the last few days, and it really irritates me. So the scenario we've been in, Ciara, for the last 16 weeks is a remote emergency pandemic learning scenario. Okay, it's not blended learning. Blended learning looks nothing like that. Blended learning is a piece where it's well designed by teachers who are well skilled and qualified in what they're doing. And in the research that we have in our ETB, we have brilliant research around our SEN learners and how they've engaged with the learning, the quality of the learning has improved, and the teachers who are skilled enough to do it have told us that this is a solution that they would be happy to continue with in September. So I think this is a sustainable, workable solution.
You think digital platforms are a sustainable, workable solution?
It's more than digital platforms, Ciara, and I think that's the important point. You can have all of your Teams and your Microsoft and your Google platforms, but it's about how we design and work the time that we have online with our learners. In some of our circumstances, we found that our kids actually engaged better with better quality work and the outcomes were better. So I think where we're losing the plot here is we have to think of long, sustainable methods of making this work.
Okay,
we're talking about logistics here. Let
me bring Margaret back in, Sam. Margaret, does that chime with you that blended learning and remote learning can be better than school?
No, definitely not. I mean, I have my 7-year-old is, you know, quite good with technology, but even still, we've had a couple of Zoom calls with friends, and they've just been a disaster because the kids,
Kira,
just don't.
I think we've a misconnection there as well on this, right? So blended learning doesn't have to take place from home. And that's a really important part as well. Blended learning can take place from anywhere. So if it's the school's decision that they're going to look at hiring out the local community centre, they've got kids blending for 3 hours in the morning, then they have a face-to-face interaction with their learners. So it's really important that we define what's going to happen in the classroom when we come back in September. What am I using that time that I have with my learners online or in the class for them to do? And hopefully we're having conversations around, well, let's look towards the junior cycle and the amazing learner-led stuff that can happen around that. So we have to be very focused on task. We also have to think long-term planning.
Can I ask you, Sam, because this sounds...
Let me make this point, Kira, with you. We have to look long-term planning. We may need to close these schools at two or three hours' notice. Okay, we could be back in September and there's a pandemic hitting us again in October and we have to be able to lock up and close the doors. So we have to ensure that we have teachers and we have learners ready
to go. Can I ask you this question though, Sam? Because I'm genuinely interested in what you're saying about blended learning and it doesn't take place at home necessarily. So there's these models with community centres, etc. Have those models existed anywhere so far? Because
Have they?
Because I don't know anyone who's taken part in them. And all I haven't met personally any peer of mine in terms of any of my children's friends, parents, or any of my own friends who have kids.
Yeah.
None of them have found remote learning worth a damn, really.
So the states have been running these models in places like the Bronx and New York. They have had these models for the last 10 years. So we're way behind the curve in terms of this type of education, right? And they've had these models. And in these schools, they're under-resourced. They have a lack of funding. They certainly don't have the amount of funding that we have. And they have teacher-learner ratios down to 1 to 12. These kids are taking between 40 and 60% of their learning in a blended model. They're not at home.
And lastly, Sam, you know, this is, I'm genuinely interested because I haven't heard these things before. But lastly, you sound like you know an awful lot about this. Is our Department of Education looking at these models? Are they looking at schools taking on community centres? I mean, I know the College of Surgeons has taken on Croke Park to allow for social distancing for its students. So certainly at third level, people are thinking outside the box. The Department of Education is not known, it's known to be a conservative kind of a department. It's not known for its innovation, let's be honest. Is this being looked at?
Kira, let's put the call out, right? I don't earn enough big bucks to be able to give you the answers to those.
That's fair.
Unfortunately. But what I'm saying is, I'm in education 20 years. I've been in a role of support for digital learning for the last 5 years with the largest ETB in Ireland. We managed to train 5,000 teachers during this pandemic. The work that we did over the last 16 weeks would have taken us 4 years to do face-to-face. So we are moving at a radical pace.
So you're saying there is technology and innovation that could fill a void here? I mean, the rest of us...
It's there, Kira. It's waiting. It's going to reduce the resource costs in schools. It's going to skill these learners up for this 21st century learning that they're ready. The problem with remote pandemic learning, I'll tell you the problem in a really simple sense, Kira. Our kids hadn't got the skills to be able to lead their own learning. And that's a really sad statement that we make.
Do our teachers have the skills to deliver this? Because,
no,
you know, there was a bit harmless. Some of the texts would reflect the teachers don't seem to be known. And in fairness, I'm trying very hard not to be given out about teachers, because I understand that teachers weren't told this was coming and they were given a couple of hours and they were sent home and they'd never done this before. So I get that too. It's not about kicking teachers. But the experience was lackluster for an awful lot of people.
Let me give you another little statistic here. We've had a digital policy, a strategy that's been with us now for 5 years, 2015 to 2020. It's going to end this year. And it was fabulous. And it gave us lots of money to support technology-enhanced learning or digital learning or remote learning or e-learning, whatever you want to call it, right? But what it didn't give us was the framework for the support that we needed for our teachers. We have our brilliant PDSC in education, which provides some CPD, but we don't have the time and the space to be able to ensure that teachers have those skills. And I think moving forward, this has to be a priority. So Norma, if you're listening, Norma Foley, hear us. We are the teachers on the ground with these skills. Please listen to those that are...
This is a very interesting perspective, Sam. Thank you for coming on and sharing it. Margaret, I'm going to give you the last word out of the pair of you. Are you enthused by the idea of this, that there would be maybe a screen up, as my understanding there from what Sam was saying, a screen up in a community hall or things like that. It's not all blended learning is at home getting the email on a Sunday night saying, look at your workbooks for the week kind of thing.
Well, just a couple of things. I think some of the things that Sam said, you know, sound great in theory and sounds like she's done great work over the last few months training teachers. But really, I suppose, if we're looking at overhauling the education system, which is what she is talking about, that is a massive, mammoth task that is going to take time. It's a complete change in practice. It's a complete change in culture. And that's going to take, you know, a couple of years or more to roll out.
Okay.
You know, why weren't the teachers talking about this 4 months ago when, you know, we could all see the pandemic wasn't going away overnight? And
so you're saying
they were kicking the can
pragmatic
down the road.
We have to get the bums on the seats in September.
Yeah, and you know, teachers are all gone on their holidays. So when are they going to prepare the schools? And, you know, these models of remote learning that she talks about sound great, but I mean, that's a complete change in the current approach, which will take an awful long time to embed
Look, you sound very sensible, and thank you. And Sam, I want to thank her as well for her insights too. 53106, we're talking about reopening the schools. Cuiva is on the line. Cuiva, you are 12. Does that mean you are going to go into sixth class or into first year?
I'm going into first year.
You're going into first year. So you've been out of, you had that kind of miserable year then where you missed all the end of sixth class, is that right?
Yeah, I did.
And how did you find the last few months?
It's been hard. Like, everything just completely changed. Like, one day we were in school and the next day we were stuck inside with, like, very limited, like, options. Like, I mean, we were making these jokes in school where we were like, if the school does close, then, you know, freedom, yay. But when it did close, we were like, oh no.
Yeah. But as I recall, if we can cast our minds back, we were kind of told you were going to be closed for 2 weeks and then for 4 weeks and then for 6 weeks. It wasn't.
They kept expanding.
See you in September back at the 12th of March.
Mm-hmm, yeah. They kept on expanding it and expanding it and expanding it until we were told we're not going back.
And how do you feel now, Cuiva? Are you back seeing your pals?
Kind of, yeah. Like, I'm seeing a few of them, but not all of them, really.
Okay. And is that because you can't see them and they're far away, or because you're wary of seeing them, or because...
It's not really that. It's mainly just, like, who I want to see and, like, availability.
That's fair enough. In your view, and your view is one of the most important view, because to me it's very clear schools should be run for the children in the schools. That's who they should be run for, not anybody else. Obviously people who work in schools need to be looked after, but the whole purpose of the school is to deliver education to children, and that's what it's about. But how do you feel about September? Do you just want to go back to school and see your friends and sit in a school, or how would you feel if you were told no, you can go in 1 or 2 days a week, or you have to do a lot of stuff still on your online, or those types of things? How would you feel about that?
I really want to go back to school. Like, it sounds weird, but just having, like, just not being able to learn the way we probably should be learning and not being able to interact with the teacher or, like, do the work as we should be doing the work, like, that's hard, because I'm a person who needs, like, a teacher to sit in front of me and explain the work to me while I'm doing it.
That's normal. That's normal, Cuiva. Mm. Look, I hope that first year treats you well. Best of luck. What school will you be going to?
St. Dominic's.
Look, the very best of luck, and thank you for talking to me. That's Cuiva, who's 12. She's just missed her graduation and the end of sixth class and all of that. The schools must open. I have yet to hear a valid reason why they cannot and why they should not. And I know people say, don't, it's a false equivalent. Don't say the pubs are open, but the school... It's not a false equivalent. When the rest of society is open and the last vestiges that are closed are the schools, we're getting something very wrong. 53106, let's take a break.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.
We did put up a Twitter poll about the schools. We asked you at the top of the show, would you feel happy with children returning fully to school in September? 71.7% of you say yes, send them back, and 28.3% say no, I wouldn't be happy. So nearly three quarters of people want their children back in school or want the schools reopened. That is a significant shot across the bows, if that's reflective to the Department of Education and to government, to get this done.
Lunchtime Live with Kira Kelly on News Talk.